Hello, this is Aaron Wren, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I have special guest Ben Merkel. I should say Dr. Ben Merkel, because I believe he has a DPhil from Oxford, and he is the president of New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. Ben, thanks for joining.
Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
We're talking today because you wrote a very interesting article about the financial future of higher education and the financial model of higher education, which you say is broken. I think from the outside view, here's what most people would say. You got to have a college degree to get a good job today. They keep raising the prices. We have to keep paying them. What could possibly be the problem? So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think, well, there's a couple of problems in there. One is I think that America is opening its eyes to the myth or seeing through the myth that a college degree is necessary for getting a job. And I think that colleges have propagated this. I think it's a lie that you have to have this certification in order to get this job, because that's the only way you can make sense of taking out a student loan. If you think about it, you go to an 18-year-old and say, in order to go to this college, you have to pay this massively inflated tuition. You're going to graduate tens of thousands of dollars in debt. What sense does it make for an 18-year-old? I mean, normally when you go to take out a loan, the thing you have to do to qualify for that loan is to show your ability to repay it. Whereas student loan debt is the one debt that the way you qualify for it is by showing that you have no means to pay for it, which is really a ridiculous a financial strategy. So how do you talk somebody into thinking that it's a responsible thing to do to take out these massive student loans? Well, what you do is you attach that student loan to a degree that is supposed to guarantee you this certain job. And that job gives you this certain salary. So you go into the recruiter's office and he's going to show you, oh, you're going to get this degree in engineering. And that degree gives you this annual salary. So you'd be stupid to not take out the student loan, because look at it's an investment and there's a huge return on the investment. But the thing is, first of all, the odds, even solid universities have maybe a 70% degree completion rate. So you only have a 70% chance that you're actually going to get that product. You know, imagine take out a mortgage on a house that you had only a 70% chance of getting the house, 100% chance of getting the debt. Only a 70% chance of getting the house. And then, so that's completing the degree. What are the odds that you'll actually be in the field and graduate with the degree that you initially signed up for? Or do you discover after a while that engineering is really hard and you transition to a different degree? That's pretty regular. I mean, it's maybe half of them are gonna actually, graduate with that degree that they initially declared. And then 4 years into the career, how reliably can you predict that I'm actually going to stay in that field? So there's this whole deceit that this salary that you're signing up for is actually what you're going to get. So that I think is itself a lie. Then when you show up to the job, and you have to ask yourself, did I actually need that degree to do this work, or could an internship or an apprenticeship have gotten me here faster and far cheaper? So there's this whole, I think, deceit that the college degree gets you the job. But I think colleges have to push that in order to fill their ranks. And then I think the other piece to it is that tuition is massively inflated because they are depending so much on federal money to prop the whole thing up. So the college tuition is not responding to the signals of the free market. It's inflated and supported by federal largesse. And so that's why I refer to it as big ed, because education is taking this track that we've seen other industries take, where it's no longer, you say it's an industry, but it's not relying on the free market and its own, and the price signals of the free market and what the benefits that it's actually providing to the customer. It's responding to federal whims. And I think the whole system, it becomes broken at that point.
Definitely with student loans, the people who are taking these out are very young people who do not understand the magnitude of what they are doing in signing up for this debt, nor do they understand the laws around student loan debt, which, unlike every other form of debt, can't be discharged in bankruptcy. So the college gets the money 100% for sure, and you get stuck with the debt that if you can't pay it back, you can't even get rid of it in bankruptcy. It seems like a scam because you're preying on these young people who really, again, don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with Biden's whole student loan forgiveness, in one sense, that takes it all away. But what it does is it robs an entire generation of learning this lesson that they need to learn, which is how money works, how debt works. To just forgive all that debt, there's all kinds of financial travesties that would commit against the American public and whatnot. But I think one of the biggest ones is you would be robbing a whole generation of understanding maturity, responsibility, and what it means to responsibly take a debt and then actually keep your word and pay it back.
I'm not as opposed to some forms of debt forgiveness, but not without reforming the system, because if you just wipe away the debt, it's like bailing out the banks after they all fail in a market crash. It's a moral hazard. The universities will just raise tuition even higher, load up the next generation with even more debt, assuming that they're just going to get it written off. If they were to claw back all that money from the universities, I might be a little more sympathetic to a student loan forgiveness, but that's not what Biden or anybody else is talking about.
Yeah, I think it was William Bennett. He was, I think, Secretary of Education under Reagan, and he coined what's called the Bennett hypothesis, that basically every time the federal government increases funding towards higher education, you will immediately see tuition raised at a corresponding rate. You never have them fund in such a way that it actually makes it more affordable. Every time the federal government does something and pours money into the colleges increase their spending and their bureaucracy to capture all of that funding.
You use the term big ed, which reminds me that I was remiss in not telling people your article is called something to the effect of, you know, big ed is too big to fail. And there's a link to that in the show notes you can check out. And also be sure to hit the subscribe button here on YouTube. Hit the like button. One of the things that has been written about that is starting to affect schools, and I believe will become much more of an issue around 2025, is demographic change. The millennials were a very large generation. The universities feasted on millennials. But as we get into Generation Z, the cohort sizes are just smaller. We keep hearing every year record low birth rates. And so we've had a gradual decline and a future cliff in some respects to the number of people who are going to be going to college just because of demographics. Are colleges making any sorts of adjustments to right size for that future?
No, I don't see it. I really don't see it. And that demographic cliff, like we started a downward slope, I believe, in 2010. Enrollment has been dropping, and we're right in the midst of driving off the actual cliff, where there's a significant decline in just the age group, the cohort that we need to recruit from. That's dropping off quite a bit right now. I honestly don't see schools making the adjustment. Everybody feels like it's an adjustment somebody else is going to have to make. Where I am, there are certain places, like, so where I'm in Idaho, we actually are still on a climb. So I'm looking at the universities around me, and they're doing all right, and they're actually probably increasing a little bit. University of Idaho has had two record years last year and this year. So there are certain places where that demographic cliff we've not gone off it, but throughout the U.S., it's hitting hard. I think one of the things that's really interesting, though, is if you think about it, the colleges are getting hit by this, you know, demographic cliff that we've driven off, but who is responsible for changing the attitude of America with regard to families, starting families, hostility to the home and the fruitfulness of the home. We did it to ourselves and now are reaping the reward of it.
some people have predicted a shakeout of colleges, and we have heard of some colleges going under. These tend to be liberal arts colleges that are not selective, not super highly rated, located in not necessarily attractive locales, but still very expensive. That group of people seems to be getting hit really hard. Do you think that ultimately there will be a shakeout in which a number of these universities actually go out of business, or are people going to limp along, or are they going to get bailed out again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of those smaller colleges like that definitely will go under. Large state universities will get bailed out, but these little liberal arts colleges, I think a number of them are going to get purged. We're seeing them starting to fall away right now, and the causes are different. You know, you see Christian colleges that no longer distinctively, you know, they don't lean into their Christian distinctives. They're indistinguishable from the secular schools. Those are starting to fall as donors and families who thought they were going to get a Christian education start to see the truth of it. So they're pulling back. We're starting to see some of those schools close down. But I also think one of the biggest things that's still to really come is America's revolt against the lie that a college degree is necessary for a job. I think that more and more people are seeing that they don't need that. There are other ways to get into the workforce. And I think that the bluff is going to get called. And I think that's still to come. It's in the next few years. I think colleges need to step back and recover an understanding of what a college education really can do and what it can't do. And we need to actually far more accurately represent what is the point of a college education. What can it do? What can it not do?
It's very odd to hear you as a college president saying you really don't need a college degree to get a job. Because a lot of people are thinking, well, why else would I go to college? What's the model of New St. Andrews if you think we're moving away from this college degree to get a job model?
Yeah, I think there's an element of vocational training that happens at college. There's an element of it, but it's one piece of a larger package. And I think when colleges step in and try to say, I can certify you for that job, well, by definition, you're being trained by people who usually are no longer in that industry and are distant from it. If you want to get trained in that job, on-the-job training is usually the most effective form of training. I think a college education, what a college education can do best is what the classic liberal arts college was supposed to do. We've pulled away from that old liberal arts model into this professionalization and sort of vocational certification of the college degree. But the old classic liberal arts goal was to create a certain kind of person, to inculcate certain habits of cultural leadership. You know, you think of the liberal arts from the Latin word liber. It was the education for the liber, which is the Latin word for the free man. There is a certain kind of cultural leadership that I think a college education can do an excellent job of formation. And I do think that those years from 18 to 22 are some of the most formative and transformational years in the life of a person. I frequently will speak to parents of prospective students, and we tend to get primarily kids who come out of that classical Christian education movement. So they've done homeschooling or a classical school, kindergarten through high school, and the parents will regularly say, listen, I gave them the classical education, they have their Christian worldview, so they've got all of that formation. Now I need to send them to a college to learn their vocational skills. And because they have this formation, it doesn't matter where I send them to college. They're going there for the vocational skills. But the question I always ask is, the years 18 to 22, were those in your life, you know, and ask any person, the years 18 to 22 in your life, were those the inconsequential years, you know, where in terms of the formation of your sensibilities, your instincts, your loyalties, were those the years where nothing happened? Or when you look back, were those some of the most transformative, for good or for ill? Were those some of the most transformative years in your life? This is a really, really important time, and the concrete is not dry yet. And I think the completion of the formation of the person, and that is really worth taking some time to do in a distinctive way to make sure that we're passing on our cultural heritage, to make sure we're developing in them certain core skills of the human person. That's what I think a college education can do really well. And it's interesting because I look at America now and I look at the church now, and that's the thing that we're now missing. Just even from a purely vocational perspective, when I talk to CEOs who are trying to hire college graduates, what they will constantly tell me is, I don't care about your degree. I don't care about whether you have the vocational skills because I can teach you those. What I need to know is, are you a hardworking person who can think clearly, who can communicate, who can hear what I'm saying, who can speak back to me, who can write, who can speak, who can show up not hungover, not, you know, do you have basic distinctive moral convictions that I can trust you as an employee? That's the piece that is missing, and that's the piece that's not being formed in America today. And that's what we focus on. And the result is, vocationally, our graduates are highly sought after and extremely successful in a wide variety of careers. I do think, honestly, the age that we're in now, the notion that you should spend 4 years training for one specific skill when we have a job market that is constantly ever shifting, and we don't progress in our jobs vertically near as much as we progress laterally. We move to new fields, we adjust. Innovation, adaptability, improvisation, creation, creativity, those are the skills that are needed. And those are the skills that we are working to inculcate alongside actually trying to mature them in a distinctively Christian worldview and a Reformed confessional position. And I think that's it's funny because when I say, you know, we just offer a single degree in liberal arts, that always sounds like the "would you like fries with that" degree, and people will wonder, like, how is that even a thing that people would want? But when you walk through like where America is now, what we need, and what is it that we're trying to graduate, I think most people say immediately, actually, I wish that I had an education like that rather than what I got.
So one thing that distinguishes you is that you're a Christian college. Another thing that distinguishes you is this focus on the liberal arts and personal formation. A third thing that distinguishes you, which I find particularly interesting, is that you don't take federal money. So I don't believe people can take out federal student loans to go to your school. How does that work? And how has that made your operations and your model different from a typical college?
Yeah. So we follow, Hillsdale and Grove City are both kind of noted for that, taking no federal money. So the two main things that we're saying no to would be the federally subsidized student loans and the Pell Grant. Those are the Title IV monies that that most schools rely on. We say no to it for a variety of reasons. One is the conviction that there will be strings attached to that money that we don't want to be tied up with. I know that right at the end of Obama's second term, he started releasing these Dear Colleague letters, which were setting restrictions on how the federal money, if you took the federal money, what you had to do on your campus with regard to sexual identity, gender, all those sorts of things. Trump undid those pretty early on, but I think we're about to get Biden's version of what Obama did. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Christian colleges respond to that. Are you now, if you take Pell Grants, do you need to let guys into the girls' shower? Do you need to let guys onto the girls' volleyball team? Those sorts of things. So we don't want to be tied to those strings. The other thing is I really think that I want my product to be on the free market. I want it to be receiving the price signals of the free market. I want our tuition to be set at what the market is ready to pay for it, not the inflated version of it. So I think that's important. So how do we manage to do that? I mean, we have to keep things tight. We have to be narrowly focused on prices and spending. We have to be really disciplined with that. Our price is actually shockingly low. We were at $15,700 this year, $15,700 for the whole tuition for the year, which for a private school is well under 50% of the average private school tuition. We keep it low because we know that our students can't go and get student loans to get it. So we want it priced for the everyman, for the common person to be able to afford. So we keep our amenities focused really just on what the actual deliverable is, which is the education. So we really try to be as disciplined as we can on we've got some buildings, we've got some great faculty, and we try to primarily fund those things. We don't have a huge football stadium. We don't have a lazy river. We don't have any of those kinds of amenities. We have an excellent education. That's the product that we're trying to give.
When I was a college student in the late 80s and the early 90s, college was a pretty Spartan experience. So, you know, I lived in the dorm freshman year. There was like a bathroom and showers down the hall. We had a little phone box that we shared between two things. Our recreational facilities were sort of just basic gyms and things of that nature. And I went to Indiana University. We always had a beautiful campus. It's one of America's most beautiful campuses. But college was a pretty Spartan experience. And today, college is a luxury experience for a lot of people. And you can see where the money is going in terms of these lavish facilities, lavish cafeterias. Mitch Daniels used to be the president of Purdue University. He's like, you do realize in all the hundreds of years that we've had universities, every single student complained that the food was bad. And now you come here, it's like five-star dining with five different types of house-made blue cheese dressing, depending on which dining hall you go to, which was absolutely true, by the way, that had five different bespoke recipes, one for each dining hall. It sounds like you've avoided some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, I think it's really interesting. Like if you go on a campus tour, like let's say you're a prospective student, you go to a university to get the tour. You spend the whole time in the dorms, in the football stadium, in the gym, in the climbing wall, the pool, all that. Do you actually go in and sit in on a class? Not really. You're about experiencing the amenities. And if you think about it, that's what you're actually paying for. You're paying for the amenities. Right now, I was just reading yesterday, the average college student outside of class, do you know how many hours of work they're putting into their studies outside of class? The old rule was you're supposed to put in 3 hours of study for every 1 hour of class that you do. Right now, the typical student studies about 5 hours a week for outside of class. The academic rigor is gone. It's about the party scene. It's about the amenities. It's about being this four-year kind of cruise ship experience. And so that's when they're recruiting you, that's what they're trying to win you with. And that's what they're spending all of their money on, is building out those amenities to win potential students.
There's another thing that's different about New St. Andrews. The Anglo-American college model has been the campus out of town, self-contained, its own world. Whereas you operate more on the continental model, where your campus is on the main street of Moscow, yeah, Idaho, integrated into essentially the community center, the urban life of the city, to the extent that you could say a town of 25,000 people has such a thing. Was that a deliberate choice? And how does that affect the New St. Andrews experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. Was it a deliberate choice? You know, I wasn't in leadership when this location was selected, but it has become so much a part of our identity that it sure feels like a deliberate choice. I mean, so my goal as president is to make NSA something that, first of all, that a student can attend as a pedestrian, a campus that you can get an apartment within walking distance, and there are grocery stores and whatnot, that you could do this whole thing just on foot. I think that's an important part of our vibe, our community vibe. And yeah, we're right on Main Street right now. If you were to walk out on the street, well, we just got our first snow of the year, but the street would be full of college students, and the coffee shops all around would be college students studying. This is kind of our campus. One of the things that's distinctive about us is that we don't do dorms. And a lot of times this assumption is, well, it's because you're so Spartan that you can't afford to add that. But for most colleges, the residence hall system is a major part of how they manage to actually turn a profit on the year. So like when you are accepted to school, frequently they'll say you're required to live on campus the first year or the first 2 years or something like that. That's because they need to fill out their dorms and their meal contracts, because that's where they make their actual money. A lot of schools are not in the black until they figure in their residence hall revenue. And so we could add dorms and we could make a lot of money that way. But I found that having the students live in the community and have a life outside of NSA is actually a really important part of their, it's like a steep on-ramp to adulting. So when a student comes to town and they say, okay, where do we live? We say, well, find an apartment, figure out how to get your Wi-Fi hooked up, figure out how to do your own laundry, how to do your shopping, figure it out because you're an adult and we treat you like an adult. And what I see is that the students, by the time they graduate, have assumed a level of maturity that are ready to be immediately enter the workforce, go get a job and understand next steps, start a family. And then probably one of the biggest things for us is we're a Christian school, but we don't have a chapel service. So we have a weekly gathering, but it's a disputatio. It's a debate or a lecture. It's an academic gathering. We don't do a chapel. But what we do say is that we require that our students be attending one of the local evangelical churches. We don't say which one. We just want you in a local church. But we don't want chapel, we don't want the college to fill the space that a healthy congregation ought to be filling for the students. So the students are involved and engaged in local congregations, being mentored by married couples and families and with little kids running around and elderly people. I just remember as a college student living in a dorm and for like 3 years, never leaving campus. And you live in this imaginary life and you forget what the real world is. And so I want the students to know what the real world is their entire time while they're here.
You mentioned Hillsdale earlier, and Hillsdale's the biggest name in this sort of alternative model of not taking federal money. Hillsdale has really leaned into their distinctives as an institution. It's not exactly the same as you, but they've figured out who they are. They've leaned into it. They don't take federal money, and they've been enormously successful. Their lines out the door trying to get into that place. Their acceptance rates are now reaching the low levels, similar to some of the more elite schools in the country. And yet we see very few people attempting to replicate the kind of model that Hillsdale did or that you're doing. Why aren't more people doing that, especially in light of the Hillsdale success example?
Yeah. Well, Hillsdale is immensely successful. They're also over a century old. So they've got a lot of cloud behind. And what they've done really well is from a fundraising perspective, they've built a massive endowment that allows them to offset a lot of the revenue that they would get if they took federal money. We do not have that endowment. That's one place where we have a long ways to go to be where Hillsdale is. Our fundraising is very nascent and we got a long ways to go. But I think the reason why schools aren't doing it is because it's hard. I mean, it really is. It's tough to do. It's tough to start. And it's tough to stay disciplined and focused like that. And free money, you know, when COVID came out and there was all these huge checks, I remember getting a call from the state saying, you know, we've got a check for, I forget, it was like maybe 200 grand for you. For COVID something. And I was like, we don't want it. We're saying no to all of it. We didn't take any money through all of COVID. But it's just hard because every moment, like I really could use a couple hundred grand. I there's a lot I could use that for, and it's hard to say no to it. And so I think it's a difficult thing to do. You have to be very disciplined to do it.
Last question. If there is another college president or 100 college presidents listening to this right now, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I think getting off of the federal money is a big one. And I think that actually is, it's really interesting. I was just at a conference for our accreditation agency, a Christian accreditor, and they were noting that a full 20% of their colleges were now not taking federal money, which was used to be we were the only ones that showed up like that. Now there's an increasing selection of schools like that. I think getting off of the federal money, But I think one of the biggest things is define what is it that you actually are giving with this experience. And if it's just vocational certification, you're not going to make it. You need to be able to articulate clearly what it is you do. And I think you need to be ready to lean into opposition when you fly your flag and people are offended by that. College presidents, college leadership is select. There's one trait that all college leadership is selected for, which is the ability to demonstrate compliance. That's what colleges have to do. College administrations spend all of their time trying to demonstrate compliance to accreditation, to federal money, to state board of education. They just demonstrate compliance, compliance, compliance. But the thing is there's a space over here that they need to be in. But in order to be over there, they would have to be able to demonstrate defiance. And it's very hard to find anybody who has made it all the way up to a high rank in a college or university administration who still has that characteristic or attribute. And so, but I think we're going to need to find college leadership that's willing to actually demonstrate defiance.
Well, thank you very much. My guest has been Ben Merkel. He's the president of New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. He wrote a very interesting article on higher ed as a too big to fail industry that might end up failing anyway. There's a link to that in the show notes. Ben, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. I would just add that article is actually the first of a long series. So if you want to follow it, definitely jump on and there'll be a lot more to follow.
Excellent. Be sure to check it out, everybody.
Thank you.